If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Like a long, lonely stream, I keep running towards a dream. Moving on, moving on, moving on.
Like a branch on a tree, I keep reaching to be free. Moving on, moving on, moving on.
There's a place in the sun where there's hope for everyone. When my poor, restless heart's got to run. There's a place in the sun, and before my life is done, got to find me a place in the sun. I get weary from the load. Moving on, moving on, moving on.
Like this tired, troubled earth, I've been rolling since my birth. Moving on, moving on, moving on.
There's a place in the sun where there's hope for everyone, and my poor restless heart's got to run. There's a place in the sun, and before my life is done, got to find me a place in the sun.
Listening to Jake Shimabukuro featuring Jack Johnson and Paula Fuga covering Stevie Wonder's A Place in the Sun from Jake's latest release, Jake and Friends. Admittedly, I've gotten to the Jake Shimabukuro story a little late. For those unaware, Jake is the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele. That is to say, many play his instrument, but few have the skill, dexterity, and finger strength to carry off equally incredible playing of such a small instrument. This prowess is evident in the company he keeps, the career he's had, and the continued touring and music he's making. His latest effort, a few years in the making, is a compilation of terrific tunes and collaborations. Many of the artists featured on Jake and Friends are mutual friends, so I was glad to have the opportunity to chat with such an incredible musician, and as you'll hear, a great person.
I am fascinated by your story and the instrument that you play, all leading to the Jake and Friends record. First, let's start at the beginning. I read somewhere that you were handed a ukulele at 4 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I was born and raised in Hawaii, so we all learn how to play the ukulele there. I mean, in the fourth and fifth grade, you know, we learn it in school, but I had early access to it because my mom played. So when I was about 4 years old, she sat me down and taught me some basic chords, and I just fell in love with it.
And I assume you learned traditional songs then too, right? I mean, was that the basis of your learning early on?
Yeah, so I started out playing a lot of kind of more traditional ukulele songs and traditional Hawaiian songs, of course. And then when I was, then later on, as I got a little bit more proficient on the instrument, you know, I kind of started to gravitate toward other styles of music, and I became fascinated with the guitar, and never had the desire to play guitar, but I always had a strong desire to play guitar songs on the ukulele. And that's kind of what led me to, I guess, my playing style was my inability to sing. I'm a horrible singer. So I had to really focus on playing melody, being more melodic on the ukulele rather than just strumming. And it wasn't something uncommon. You know, I mean, a lot of people were doing it, of course. So I had a lot of great mentors and ukulele players growing up in Hawaii that were a huge inspiration, you know, for me.
Did you always see yourself as somebody who wanted to play ukulele as a career, as something that you would get paid to do on the road, traveling around from coast to coast in the United States and worldwide? I mean, your first record deal was with Sony Japan. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Was that always in the back of your mind?
No, not really. I mean, it was always my passion and something I loved, but I never thought that I would have a career doing it, you know. And you mentioned Japan, and that was really when I got when I was offered my first record deal. That was with a Japanese label. It was Sony Music, that was the first time, because it was actually a 7-album contract. Right. So that was the first time in my life where I felt like, okay, wow, okay, this is a commitment, you know, to follow through. And that's when I kind of, I think, looked at it beyond just it being, you know, a hobby, but a hobby that I was very passionate about, of course. But I just never thought that I would, you know, maybe it was a confidence thing. I never really had the confidence, you know, to be a soloist, because prior to signing with Sony Music, I always played in bands. So I was always a side man, you know, there was always a lead singer.
Yes.
And I was always kind of like the guy in the background. And then I would step up for like my 16 bar solo and then come back, you know, to the background. So when it changed, when that changed a bit and I became kind of more like the front man, you know, then it was pretty scary at first. So, I mean, it still is scary now. So
did those early years prepare you for the international attention when somebody posted George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps on YouTube? I mean, that probably catapulted your career, not only for the people who are enjoying you on the Japanese imprint of Sony Music, but also worldwide. I mean, YouTube is obviously a worldwide platform. Were you prepared for the kind of over 15 million views that video had received?
Oh, definitely not. I mean, that was a huge, I mean, I was just, lucky and in the right place at the right time. You know, the video went viral, I think, in 2005, 2006. And that's when YouTube was just starting out. So I really feel like I was very fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time. And it did. It opened so many doors for me, because prior to that video, you know, I wasn't really touring. I was spending a lot of time in Japan and performing out there because of the record label, that because of my record deal. And then I was doing a couple of things, like maybe in California and then obviously in New York, because that's where that video was shot. Mm-hmm. But when I shot that video, it was actually someone took a clip of an interview that I had done in New York in Central Park. And it was for a little TV show. It was a short clip. They took that clip and put it on YouTube. And that's what's, you know, went viral. So
it was a short show called Midnight Ukulele Disco, which I don't think too many people know about, right? Yeah.
Midnight Ukulele Disco. And that was the show. And, you know, so I'm so grateful for them, you know, for that interview and for that person, whoever took that video off their website and put it on YouTube, you know. So, so again, just very fortunate. And it did. It opened a lot of doors for me. I had a lot of opportunities to open for bands and to tour with other bands. In fact, I'm in Alexandria, Virginia right now. Tonight we're playing at a venue called the Birchmere. And when that video went viral, I remember I got offered to play here at the Birchmere, and I opened for John Hyatt, you know, three nights in a row. That was my first time performing, you know, here at the Birchmere. And I get to come back every year, and now I'm doing, you know, my own solo shows here. And, you know, so it was like opportunities like that that just led to incredible things, like, you know, like this new Friends record and all kinds of other things that I never would have imagined, never would have dreamed of, you know, of experiencing. So, yeah, I'm just blown away. So,
well, it's great. It's great. I got to tell you, that's how I was introduced to you by this Friends record, because many of the guests that we've had on the show in the past appear on this record. They're idols of mine and certainly of our audience, and I would assume yours as well. Mm-hmm. I would assume that all of that collaboration got your name known more in the industry, whether you were opening for John Hyatt or Jimmy Buffett, like you did on so many tours. That's probably what really got you introduced to all of these amazing artists, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, Jimmy Buffett was a huge inspiration for me. And he was one of the guys, one of the artists that took me under his wing, you know, years ago when that video first went viral. I mean, he invited me out on the road with him and the Core Reefer band. And so I toured with Jimmy for probably about 2 or 3 years. And the thing is, Jimmy Buffett doesn't do, you know, he never does back-to-back shows. Well, I shouldn't say never, but usually he doesn't do back-to-back shows. So there's always, there's usually always a day off, you know, in the middle, in between his shows. So what was really a great opportunity was for me to do my own solo shows in between his shows, right? So, you know, we would do like a stadium or arena one night, then the next day in that same city, I would play like a small little club.
Oh, that's great. You
know, my own little solo show there. And it was so cool because some nights like Mac McAnally from the band, or, you know, some of the other members of the band would come and sit in with me and do stuff. And Jimmy was always so good. Like there were times, I mean, we'd be playing at stadiums and he would, you know, we would be on stage and then he'd tell everyone, hey, tomorrow night, you know, Jake's playing at blah, 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 you know,
go support
it. Yeah. So it was, you know, so to have that kind of support, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Let's fast forward to this record and all of the great people that are on this record. Jack Johnson makes his home now in Hawaii, and you've become friends with him and you've played his festival a few times. And the record opens with a song with Jack Johnson and Paula, who in her own right, is somebody who's getting a lot of attention now. A Place in the Sun is the first collaboration, and that's a song that Jack brought to you. Is that correct? That Jack thought he might have you play on?
That's correct. When I approached him with doing a track with me on this record, I told him, yeah, if there's a song that you want to record together, you know, let me know, because I kind of wanted the guest artist to kind of choose the song, right? So they can, so, you know, if they wanted to, they could choose something that was very familiar to them already. And Jack Johnson said, you know, he was like, hey, how about A Place in the Sun by Stevie Wonder? I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And he came in and he brought in Paula Funga, who I've worked with before in the past too. And she's just an incredible artist, you know. So they came in and we were just hanging out in the studio, catching up. And then we're like, yeah, let's try this song. And we took one pass at it and we just kind of looked at each other and we're like, man, that was so cool. It was so vibey. And, you know, Jack just has this way of bringing this energy and just this, I don't know. He just has this thing about him. Everything he sings, everything he does, you know, it's he pulls you into his world, you know, and I couldn't have thought of a better way to open up this record, you know, than with Jack and Paula. And the way they sing together too, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much positivity, just so much heart, love, and it's awesome.
There are so many things to unpack in this record. There are instrumental tunes, there are cover tunes, there are original songs by artists who brought those to the table. And then there are the players, some of the people that, you know, are masters of their instrument, much like you are on the ukulele. You know, Sonny Landreth is not a name most people know. How did you hook up with Sonny to do Sunny Days Ahead?
Yeah, so I've always been a huge fan of Sonny Landreth. I mean, his tone, his playing, I mean, the things he does. I watch him play and I just shake my head because I'm like, I can't even comprehend what he's doing, you know. But I met him through Jimmy Buffett because he used to come in and sit in with the Coral Reefers. So that's where I got to know him. But, you know, I'd been a fan, you know, long before I got to meet him in person. And through Jimmy Buffett, you know, we got to meet, and Sonny and I actually were able to do some cool performances together, like at the New Orleans Jazz Festival, things like that. So when this record came up, when this project, you know, when we started doing this, I wanted to reach out to him to see if he'd be down with doing a duet, which he was. So that was very cool, because that track for me is so special, because never in my wildest dreams, I mean, as just a fan of the ukulele, I never would have thought I would hear Sonny Landreth playing with an ukulele player. It's a song that we wrote together. It's called Sunny Days Ahead, and I just love it. It's so cool. I mean, everything that he, because we played it live in the studio, we were recording live, and everything that he does, man, it's just so beautiful, so perfect. His tone is unlike anything else I've ever heard, and he's just the sweetest guy too, you know. So I mean, I'm sure you've talked with him and interviewed him, but he's just so down to earth, so humble. But man, when he plays that guitar, it just takes you to another world.
Let's go from one veteran of the music industry to somebody who has exploded over the last, I don't know, 2 years. And I want to say because he was on our show, but that's not necessarily the case at all. That's just a joke. But man, you and Billy Strings, I mean, talk about a master of his craft at such a young age, and what you bring to the table, and Smoke and Strings is just so much energy. And I know that you performed it just a couple nights ago live, I think, in Pittsburgh. And I've seen the behind the scenes footage. This was the first take in the studio where you got this down?
It was insane, because we had never met up until the day that we recorded together. I mean, of course, I knew we knew of each other, but that was our first time meeting. And yeah, we were like, yeah, hey, so, you know, what's this? You know, we got to write a song together. Well, he suggested that we'll just figure it out in the studio. You know, when we get there, what we're going to play. So I was like, all right, cool. So when we met in the studio, we kind of talked a bit, and then we took our instruments out, and then we started playing through some progressions, and he was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then he would do something like, oh yeah, that's great there. And it was kind of a ballad, you know? So, and then we just basically said, well, I told him, I said, well, at some point we got to go into, you know, like a jam, because you got to do your thing. Everybody yeah. wants to hear you, you know, shred. Right. So we're like, yeah, well, let's just kind of play through it and see what happens. So what's on the record is our playthrough.
Wow.
And we didn't even know we were being recorded, because we're like, well, let's just jam and see what happens. So we just started playing. And because we didn't know it was being recorded, you know, we weren't overthinking anything. We're just having fun. You know, we're like looking back at each other. And so the thing is, what's kind of a bummer about it is, because that wasn't our real take. I mean, that was just our rehearsal take. We didn't have the camera set up yet. Oh. So we did release a making of, you know, that thing, but what that was, the footage, all the footage was everything we did after that take.
Right.
So it's kind of a bummer, because none of that is on the recording. But so that's what happened. So we recorded that. You know, I mean, not recorded, but we played through that. We're like, oh man. And we got all excited. We're like, oh, that's cool. Let's do something like that. So we started trying to remember what we did. And I made some notes for myself. Okay. We did, you know, we went to the A section, B section, you soloed, I soloed. And then we went to the jam kind of thing. So we did that. So then we went for a real take, or what we thought was a real take, and it was okay. You know, that we kind of stumbled a little bit. And then, so we went for another one and it was a little better, but then we didn't transition nicely into the fast part. So then we thought, oh, let's just try punch just the fast part, and that's what's on the video of us, you know, trying to punch the fast part, so which we did. And but then after we did that, I think it was either my manager or his manager, they said, hey, why don't you guys come in and listen to the very first thing you guys did. And we were both surprised, because we're like, oh, were you recording that?
Mm-hmm.
So we went into the control room and they played it back, and we just looked at each other. We're like, dude, that was great. That was like so spontaneous, so fun. You know, it wasn't perfect, but like you said, it had a certain energy to it that is so rare to capture in a studio recording, especially when you know you're being recorded.
Yeah.
So I really think that's what was so magical about that, is they captured something that we didn't know was being captured.
There are other great tracks. And if we spend as much time talking about each track, I'll keep you well into your show tonight. But I do want to mention On the Road to Freedom featuring Warren Haynes. I mean, what a pleasure it must have been to play with Warren, not just because he's a terrific player, but he's such an amazing individual, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that must have been a treat too, right?
It was very intimidating trying to trade leads with that guy. You know, and that's and what you hear on that recording, I mean, that is our only full take of that song.
Wow.
From beginning to end. So I was on tour when we recorded that, so I had my band members out with me, so we all went into the studio and we laid everything down live, you know. So it was really incredible. And when I talked to Warren, you know, he said, oh yeah, you know, we'll do some intro thing, and then he'll go into the singing, and then he said, then we'll go into the solo, and we'll kind of play back and forth, and then he said the outro will just kind of play it out too. So we didn't, and what we said was at the end, you know, we'll just do a fade out, so we'll just play and we're just going to fade it out. So when we got into it, and I remember I had my little amp, and as the song would progress, I would drive the amp a little bit more so I could get a little bit more grit. So you hear the uke starts off pretty acoustic, but by the end of it, it's like really gritty, you know. But what was cool is as we were going back and forth, you know, because there were just times where the ukulele and the guitar just kind of doing this thing. And I remember just, I was just watching Warren the whole time because he would do his thing and then he'd open his eyes and he'd look at me and toss the solo to me. And then I would do something. So we were having so much fun and we just got into it. And when we were done, you know, we all kind of looked at each other. We're like, oh man, that was so cool. And we walked into the control room and the engineer said, wow, that was like 14 minutes long. And we looked at each other and we're like, no, there's no way. It felt like 5 or 6 minutes. But sure enough, I mean, it was a long jam. And so we're like, well, we can fade it out. So we listened back. And I remember I was sitting right at the control room with Warren and sitting right next to him. And I saw him the whole time. He had his head down like this and he was just listening. And then when it was done, you know, we both kind of looked at each other and I think I said it first. I said, I don't think I want to cut anything out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he was kind of happy to hear that because he was trying to think of where we could cut or how we could edit it to make it shorter. But man, it would have just been, he does so many cool things on that track that it would have been a tragedy to cut any of that out, you know, because it's just incredible. It's just some incredible moments, you know, with the guitar and the ukulele. And I'm just, you know, that's another track, like as a fan of the ukulele, I'm just blown away because I never thought I would hear an ukulele with Warren Haynes.
Yeah.
Never, you know? And I'm just so honored, you know, and thrilled that we were able to capture that. And he's just so, so brilliant. So it's 14 minutes. It's the longest track on the record, but yeah. it just rocks. Takes a journey. I love it. I'm glad you like it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The amazing thing too about this record, aside from the amazing musicians, whether it's Billy or Warren or Sonny, are the amazing vocalists that are on this record. You know, to hear Mike McDonald's voice against the ukulele, or to hear Bette Midler and the Rose against the ukulele, yeah. or Willie Nelson, whose voice, you know, is synonymous with country and bluegrass and all of that. But then you hear him again with the ukulele, you begin to think, wow, it's such a universal instrument and so well played that anybody can sing along with it. I mean, what was it like playing with these legends? Like literally, like everybody knows who Michael McDonald is. Everybody knows who Willie Nelson is. Everybody knows who Bette Midler is. I mean, what a thrill to work with these icons of music.
Oh yeah, it was, man. It was such an honor. I tell people the album should have been called, you know, instead of Jake and Friends, it should have been Jake and Dreams Come True, because that's what it feels. It's like, I mean, I have to pinch myself. Like when we first started talking about this record 4 years ago, I didn't think it was going to happen. You know, I just thought it was just dream big and see what happens. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's unbelievable. I mean, here we are 16 tracks later.
Yeah.
You know, with this record, I mean, we were hoping for like 5 or 6, you know, and even that was a stretch, but you know, and here we are. So, yeah, I'm just so grateful, you know, to all these artists for taking the time to do this. And really, it's really like a stamp of approval, you know, from each artist, you know, when like doing a track with you, it's like, I don't know. It's
probably very honor and rewarding, right? That you've made it to be able to record with these people. I mean, that's really,
Bette Midler was like my mom's all time favorite singer growing up. And my mom used to sing the Rose to me. And like till one day, like now fast forward and I actually get to play the Rose with Bette Midler, and then, you know, and then have my mom listen to it. You know, she was, I remember when I first, after I recorded it with Bette, I brought the recording home. I didn't tell my mom anything. And I said, hey, mom, here, check this out. And I played it for her. Starts with the ukulele. So she's listening as Bette starts singing. My mom just like, who's that singing? And I said, mom, that's Bette Midler. She was like, what? Wow. Couldn't believe it. So
that's great. I mean,
it's just unreal.
The other thing that's great about this record is sort of your story of the Beatles track Exploding comes full circle with so many great Beatles covers on this record. I mean, the Vince Gill and Amy Grant performance. Oh my God. It's just, I'm just talking about it and I have goosebumps. It's just unbelievable.
I never thought, you know, it's funny because it's one of the greatest love songs ever written. I mean, and I'm a huge George Harrison fan, right? So when I was talking to Vince about it and he brought up the connection, you know, with George Harrison and the ukulele. So he was like, oh, we should do a George Harrison song. So he mentioned something. And then he said, oh, let me see if my wife, Amy, you know, will sing it with me. And I thought, wow, Vince Gill and Amy Grant singing something as a duet. Like, come on. That's like, oh my gosh, that's like got to be the greatest thing ever. So, I mean, I was so excited and it turned out so beautiful between the two of them when they're singing together. It's one of my favorites. I mean, I can listen to that over and over. And then, of course, his guitar solo on that. Oh, my gosh. I was like, can I retake my uke solo? I'm glad I went first. Oh, my goodness.
Such an underrated player, right? People don't realize how great a player he is.
He's phenomenal. You know, I got to sit in with him and the Time Jumpers at Third and Lindsley a few years ago. And it was so cool, man. Just, the musicianship in that band is just, they're all aliens from another planet, man. It's insane.
It's interesting that you say that because some would suggest that you're an alien from another planet, the way that you play your instrument. What is the takeaway from playing with all of these fabulous musicians who have spent a lifetime like you have playing your instrument? What's the takeaway when you leave the studio after playing with Billy or getting blown away by Warren or Vince or even just having a lot of fun probably with Jimmy Buffett in old times? What's the takeaway for you as a musician for your craft after playing with these people?
Well, it's just, man, you know, music is so powerful. And that's the thing. I mean, the rush that I received, you know, from those experiences, the inspiration, you know, I mean, how inspired I felt afterwards, how positive I felt afterwards. I mean, all those things. And then, and also like music being the great connector, you know, because especially for a lot of these, the musicians that I've never met before prior to being in the studio with them, you know, the moment you start playing with someone, like making music with someone, there's just this instant connection, you know, that even though you may not know a lot about that person or you don't have a lot of, there's not a lot of time spent, like you didn't grow up together or anything like that. When you play music together and you both put your heart into it, you know, there's a connection that you immediately make with that person that usually takes years and years of a lot of conversation, a lot of experiences together. And that's the beauty of music. You know, it's just, it's that it communicates like it's heart to heart, you know, immediately. And so, I don't know. So the one common denominator on this record with all the diversity and, you know, all the different styles of music and the different artists that are on it you know, it's kind of neat because it's like the ukulele that strings it all together. And I felt that, I feel that too, you know, I know I'm probably biased because I play the ukulele and I'm from Hawaii, but I feel like whenever in my travels and when I go to places and I meet other ukulele groups or clubs or players, there just seems to be this common, this common thing of ukulele players kind of gravitating toward each other and forming these clubs and organizations. And they all just kind of seem to like getting together like once or twice a month. And they love doing community oriented activities like playing in hospitals or senior care homes. I know so many ukulele organizations that do things with, you know, with cancer patients and using ukuleles for therapy, music therapy, things like that. I know there's a big movement now where music therapists are trying to get ukuleles certified as certifiable music therapy tools or instruments, right? To use in clinics and things like that. So I don't know, there's something about it. And I mean, you know, George Harrison loved the ukulele. He thought it was such a special instrument. There's so many people that have said very similar things. And I think, especially for children, it's such an instrument. It's such an easy instrument to pick up and start playing right away. So you get that instant gratification of learning to play music. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So, yeah, there's something to it, I think, you know. Well, and I didn't about this until later, but a lot of the artists, the guest artists that are on this record, a lot of them are ukulele players. Like Bette plays the ukulele, Jimmy plays the ukulele, Michael McDonald plays the, he's actually playing baritone ukulele on that track.
Oh wow.
So the low strumming ukulele, that's Michael McDonald strumming.
Wow.
And it's killer, man. It's he's grooving on Go Now, you know, and that's a hard song to groove to, and it's, you know, it's Michael McDonald, he can make anything groove, right? John Anderson, he plays the ukulele.
Wow.
You know, Vince Gill has it. In fact, the ukulele that he has, I actually got to pick it out for him, and you know, and brought it to his house. It's a Kamaka tenor, and he plays it all the time. Ray Benson plays a beautiful baritone. So it's crazy. To Jack Johnson, you know, I mean, they all play. So it's, it dawned on me later that, shoots, I probably should have asked everyone to play strum ukulele with me when they sang the song.
Well, there's no reason why the second album can't be that, right?
Yeah.
Now it's time to do a second record. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk about this record. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal piece of work. Seriously, kudos to you and to all of your guests. And I'm so glad that we had this chance to talk about it and introduce people who don't know you to your music and your passion. Continued success, my friend. It was great meeting you. And you're on tour, so people have to come out and see you. And you never know where you might show up, right? I mean, you were in Pittsburgh with Billy, so people have to be on the lookout, you know, for you, Jake. And wow, thank you so much for the record and for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
No, Ira, thank you so much for your support, man, because I know you have a lot of followers and people who, you know, who really love, you know, the new music that you bring to people. So, you know, having you introduce me to your listeners is truly an honor, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Be well, okay?
All right. Take Cheers. Care. Aloha.
Aloha. That's right. We got to do one of those, right?
Yeah.
Aloha. Aloha. Be well.
Thanks, man.
For more on Jake Shimabukuro, including a ton of tour dates, visit jakeshimabukuro.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Jake and Friends. Here he is with Billy Strings and Smokin' Strings.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.